Welcome back to the Faction Podcast with our player profiles interviews ahead of the 2022 Faction Championship. Today I'm back for the last of these interviews, and I'm back here with the man who started it all and who you've listened to quite a lot now, Mr. Trent Clark. Welcome.
I hope you're all not sick of my voice.
Yeah, well, you know, it has been quite a lot of interviews, actually. It's been good. It's been good to have a lot of different people on, and I must say thank you for taking most of them and taking the work off my shoulders a little bit.
It goes both ways. You do, well, the majority, if not all, of the editing and stuff, so it's only fair that we share the workload. Otherwise, it becomes too much for one person and becomes unenjoyable. And I personally have really enjoyed doing them, and I think that you and I collaborated really well in organizing people, and I think that people did a really good job for the most part in organizing with us and being able to make our job easier to get them done.
Yeah, for sure. It's been super good to smash them out in basically a couple of weeks and get through all of them, and it has been a great time. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to all of them, and all the feedback we've had has been really good. Sounds like people are really enjoying them. So, with that said, today we're here to talk about you, and we're here to talk about the Faction Championships and have a little bit of a sneak preview of how we think you'll go and also how you have gone and a little bit of your past. So, let's start with where we normally start, the Faction. You've been around for a while, right? Sort of, I want to say you were associated with the Faction for a couple of years before actually joining?
Yeah, so I was initially trying to get in to the Faction, I want to say maybe roughly a year before Hoodie tied the big chain to my leg.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. I was basically, it's an interesting story. So I found out I got involved with the Faction through the PDQ scene, the PPTQ scene. And I originally moved from Bendigo to Melbourne to get on the Pro Tour and just make a family with the people that I wanted to be. Well, I wanted to make a family in Melbourne because I was sick of Bendigo.
Yeah.
And so I got involved in the PTQ scene. That became like essentially all that I focused on. I moved into a share house with a couple of other blokes who played Magic. And then that's how I got acquainted with members of the Faction. And I told Nathan Drew Whalen, who became one of my good friends. I'm like, I really like the idea of the Faction. I like what you guys stand for. I'd seen like the draft nights and the basketball. And I think there was something else that was going on that was orientated around the Faction. I can't remember right now, but, and I was like, I want to get in on that. And Hoodie was like, well, if you want to be a part of the Faction, you can't be a part of the Jerrys. And I said, well, that just can't happen. I said, like, it's not about, you know, one team being better than the other or anything. I said, I want to be associated with the community, and this is an awesome part of the community, so I want to be associated with it. And then there was like a bit of back and forth, and then I asked Hoodie again, and he's like, you know what you have to do. And I'm like, this isn't going to happen. And then eventually, I think he gave in, and I was invited to the second invitational, I believe, where I was like, quote unquote, judge, but just drinking Canadian clubs at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I got invited to the Faction, and I've been around ever since. So I guess you can say roughly three years.
Yeah, sure. I think that'd be Champs that you were judging.
Oh, Champs. Sorry. Yeah, it was one that Dan Weeble won.
Yep. Yeah, so the second Champs. I love that image of you and Hoodie just in a standoff. They're like, who's going to blink first between the two of you? Knowing the two of you well, I can imagine that would be a long thing.
Yeah, it was definitely always lighthearted. Like, it wasn't like we were ever coming to blows or having a dislodged argument over it. I think that Hoodie kind of looked at it, you know, like he's nurtured and grown the Faction from something, and it's something that's very near and dear to his heart. And the Faction as a group were coming up, like starting to win and do well at PTQs and go on the RPTQs, whereas the Jerrys had kind of been lucky enough to start that a little bit earlier. And so it came across, and some of the members of the Jerry's also put out a bit of a murky water when it came to like playing against them. You know, very stiff, very upholding the rules, and you know, scouting RPTQs and stuff like that. And I think that kind of mentality clashes a little bit with the mentality of what the faction stood for. And so there was always that little bit of anxiousness about, you know, would I be a fit with the faction team and the morals and laurels that Hoodie's like grafted into the faction.
Yeah, that very love the faction and the core of the faction is not even really about magic, to be honest.
No, not at all. But thankfully neither am I. Like
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So, been around for a while. Let's go through your resume a little bit. So we'll start with the non-faction events, I guess. So you have played on a couple PTs, right?
Yeah, I played in back-to-back PTs in Bilbao and Richmond, Virginia, and they were quite the experience. I really, really enjoyed my time running around the Pro Tour. It was very eye-opening.
When was that? Which year, roughly?
2018, I want to say. Rivals of Ixalan, Dominaria.
Yeah. Because that was the Australians had a team, like a green-black deck, the team deck?
Yeah, so that was the green-black deck that I was working on green-black for quite some time, and everyone else was kind of testing random stuff. Like Bren was like he was locking in black white knights like a week before it. I was like, dude, stop fucking playing that deck, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Qubit was out on his own, like he was playing Mardu as Qubit is wont to do, but I was playing this green black deck and I trophied a bunch on Modo, and I was like, you guys should play this. And we were testing it, we were having good results, and the only deck we were losing to was like mono red. But for some reason none of us cultivated the fact that mono red was like a really dense part of the metagame. So we all thought, well, no one's going to be playing this at the PT, or we just bypassed it. And we thought like people would be playing red-black, which was a little bit slower. And we thought that we had a reasonable matchup against red-black. And it turned out that mono-red was by and large the best deck at that form in that tournament. It was run by it was mono-red in the finals. And we still had a good record. I know that Chifley had a heartbreaker and wasn't able to make day two, but Mindy and I both had pretty reasonable records when it came to the deck. So yeah, it was a good deck.
Yeah, nice. So a couple of PTs, I assume some GP finishes as well.
Yeah, so I missed two winning ins for top eights over the years, and then a couple of pretty good runs, and yeah, just probably not played in enough GPs to really like push the fact that we can get results. Like if you look at Melbourne Magic players as a whole, with exception of people that are actually were gold or silver or platinum, although I don't think we ever had a platinum, but you know, gold, silver, and being able to travel to Grand Prix, it's pretty impossible for people to say, look at my resume, I'm a GP crusher in Australia, because it just doesn't really exist.
Yeah, it's rough. Even back with the old GP schedule, we used to have probably two across Australia and New Zealand each year.
Yeah, like two a year. It's just like that doesn't equate to anything.
Yeah, that's not enough shots at these really, really big tournaments to build a resume, basically.
No.
And then the level below that, so you must have played a few RPTQs, and I know you've played a ton of PPTQs.
Yeah, I had a really good run at RPTQs. That was when I was living with basically the Jerry's. Like it was a halfway home for Cooper and I lived there, and then everybody else just came there for weekends. And I think that a lot of the people on the northern side of Melbourne just really improved their game, as we were just, you know, it was less like one of those degenerate magic houses where people would just come over, drink beers, play magic. And I think we all just like exploded when it came to our experience and ability to play the formats, like the constructive formats and the limited formats. And I think I thrived in that position, because that's exactly what I wanted to do. And yeah, that equated to pretty reasonable resume when it come to being able to knock out PDQs and competing at RPTQs pretty consistently.
Yep, absolutely. on the faction side of things, you mentioned you judged the second faction champs. So then you've got, there should be one champs and a couple invitationals under your belt?
Yeah, so I've played four faction events, three invitationals. I think there was Pete's birthday one, where I lost in the finals to Crowther.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the one down in Geelong, which I didn't do so well at. That was not a great weekend for me. And then the other two weekends was Champs, which was the one that Rob won, and then the Invitational that Nathan won just previous.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you top eighted both of the Champs. I know you top eighted, and because I remember that draft, and then the Invitational also, you top eighted as well, that second Invitational.
Yeah, I've topped the Swiss in two and came and was second on the board in the Pete's birthday one.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember you not top eighting that first Invitational, because I remember watching you as we're drafting and we're rotisserie drafting, and I've told the story, but I'm barely keeping my eyes awake and knowing that I'm drafting terribly, and I remember seeing you just shaking your head in disappointment after like every second pick.
Yeah, it was a tough one to watch. I think I was more disappointed in some of the decisions that I had made that led me not to be in that top eight.
Yeah.
Me as a person, when it comes to competitive magic, I always push, like, I am my own judge, jury, and executioner. And if I make mistakes in spots that I shouldn't make mistakes in, then I'm pretty brutal on myself with that. And I vividly recollect like keeping a bad hand when I knew it was bad that cost me a match. And then I did get unlucky against Hoodie in that, where my favorite card, Him to Turak, was cast against me and I immediately lost like two games in a row. But yeah, I made a bunch of mistakes in that tournament, and basically after that tournament I just said I'm not, like, that's not good enough. So ever since then I've pushed myself pretty hard to try and win these events, or even if not just win these events, but like keep myself content, like walk away and say I played well, you know, like I did the best that I could, and you know, I take solace in that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a level that you just want to be able to finish it and at least feel like I played to a level that I'm happy with.
Yeah, 100%. That's realistically that's all I want to do, is just like push myself, like do the process, go through the process of understanding the formats in the tournaments, and then going and playing those formats as best as I can to my ability.
Yeah, for sure. So two formats this weekend. We've got Crimson Vow Draft, Highlander, and then a Crimson Vow Top 8. I know you've done a fair bit of prep in both of these formats. So starting with the draft, how are you feeling about this draft format?
Yeah, I'm very confident in my understanding of what I want to do in the draft. I think that my ability to stay open more in a draft and read a draft analytically about the cards that are being passed, not so much early in the draft, but maybe midway into pack two, gives me a good edge in this format. I think that I'm pretty firmly in the belief that you cannot force in this format. If you force in this format and you get cut, your deck will be significantly worse unless you just open well, in which case it doesn't matter what cards you take. You just, you know, you can definitely get gifted good decks in this format. But I think in a good draft pod, especially a best of three draft pod, there's a lot of things that go unseen without the experience. And I feel like I have done enough preparation in this format to understand the hidden gems and like the analytics side of where I'm supposed to be in the format and what color pairs are supposed to be doing what.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good point you make about you can't force in this format. And I think the draft sections of the format and of the drafts are very decision dense, and there's a lot of information to pass as you are doing those drafts.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that depending on when this podcast comes out, hopefully it comes out a couple of days before, but I think that people will find that the draft format on the day will be, the draft will be very different compared to the arena drafts that you do, you know, the 3, 4, 5, however many arena drafts you do per day leading up to it. Arena is not it's a good place to practice, but I don't think it's a great place to draft when you're setting up for a tournament such as this, i.e. best of three. Just because you're drafting against unknown quantities and you're drafting against people who just don't understand the pick orders. But if you are drafting against people who understand like the pick orders, they've got the experience, they understand the card quality, that card quality won't be there for you because it gets taken from, it's taken from the pool really early. And that means that you have to fall back on more experienced drafts, maybe not potentially just leading into first pick Flame Blessed Bolt, second pick a Braid, I'm red, win the day, because that is not going to happen. That can't happen for 8 people at the draft. That might happen for 1, maybe 2.
Yeah, for sure. I think the level will be higher, and in some ways I think maybe you end up having to use some of those less common cards, or the cards that you would not play as often, and knowing the difference between like the C's and the C minuses, which I think you often don't have to for Arena because it's much easier to find an open lane and just end up with all C pluses.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting to quickly touch on it. Like, this format is extremely old, right? But it still feels like it's kind of fresh because of the depth of the format, especially when it comes to BO3. BO1, not so much. I think Best of One is extremely polarized and pretty boring, but Best of Three is really interesting because there's a lot of spots, exactly like you said, where there's C plus B plus sideboard cards that just don't make any decks in Best of One, and so you don't think to take them when you're drafting for a tournament with 2 Best of Threes.
Are there any cards that stand out for you that are in that sort of C plus B plus as a sideboard card but doesn't really register in Best of One?
There's a fair few that I've gone on record to say are a lot better. I can't think of any immediately.
I know for me, Aim for the Head is one that always jumps out.
Yeah, sure. I think Aim for the Head is pretty easy to identify as a good sideboard card, though. There's cards like Honored Heirloom,
yep,
which is the 3 mana that is a mana rock and then can exile stuff from the graveyard. That doesn't read particularly well, but is quite good in sideboard matchups in specific color pairings. Nothing else comes to mind right now, but there are quite a few. So I guess it's just keep an open mind when you're going into the draft. Like, don't just draft your best of one deck because there's a lot of sideboarding to be had.
Yeah, for sure. The other format, of course, is Highlander. How's your Highlander preparation been?
I haven't played as much as what I would like to, but I'm very confident in the format currently. I think my deck choice will be, either way I go, will be a good deck choice. It'll be super solid, and I'm just looking to get through Highlander unscathed, like a 3-1. I don't particularly mind. It more or less just comes back to, if I can play Highlander well, then I'm aiming for another good draft in the top 8. And like I said today on the message, like, just hopefully my luck holds equal to that of my opponent and we get to play good matches of Magic.
Yeah, for sure. I think deep format knowledge really helps in Highlander, but especially if you're playing one of the sort of fairer, especially blue-based decks, there is a degree of just tight technical play makes a big difference.
Yeah, it also comes back to how many Force of Natures I think I'm going to, or Force of Vigors I'm going to play against in the day, or think that people are going to have in their deck.
That does make a big difference. If you're going to play one of those strategies, whether it's artifacts or really heavily graveyard-based or those sort of strategies that have those vulnerabilities, there is a big swing on how many Force of Vigors, as you say, do you have to play against. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting to think about in regards to that deck specifically. or my deck specifically, because it's an interesting spot when you think about winning a tournament from that you know the people that are going and the people know that you're going. And if you expect to do well, or your opponents expect to do well and think that they'll play against you, what will they do in their sideboarding in order to give themselves a better chance at fighting you in the mid stages of the tournament?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's something that I've definitely had to think about, or I've thought about over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I know when I talked to Alex for his interview, which should be out by now, he talked about actually writing down a list of everyone who's competing and having a guess at what sorts of decks they're going to play. Are they going to play combo decks? Are they going to play artifact decks? Are they going to be on aggro? That sort of thing. Because with a relatively small field of about 20 people, that sort of prospecting, I guess, and sort of prediction can actually make a big difference to your sideboard.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
Speaking of predictions, then, this is where we get to what I think is always the interesting part, or the controversial part, maybe, of these interviews. And that is your predictions for this event. So, first off, what are your goals? What would you be happy with, I guess?
As long as I play to my best ability on the day, I will be happy. If it falls short of what I'm trying to do, that is a little disappointing. But it's very easy to scrub out because the cards don't fall your way. It's very hard for me personally to not be disappointed regardless of outcome if I'm not achieving what I want to do. And I guess by saying that, my prediction is that I'm going to win it. I want to win this tournament. And I think that my preparation has been really good. But it just comes back to me and myself, like, I just want to do the best I can in every moment of the day, and hopefully that's good enough to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great mindset to have. I want to come in and I want to play to the best of my ability, and I think that with reasonable luck, that could see me winning the tournament. But I also, you know, it's important to acknowledge if the cards don't fall your way, you can play as well as possible and still not top eight, still not finish well.
Yeah, I think the last champs and the invitational before that, I ran pretty cold when I definitely didn't need to. Like, I could have ran cold at any other stage in the day, but it chose to happen on the back end of the tournament, which is obviously not ideal and not what you want to happen. But I can definitely take solace away from the fact that I still played those days well. I still walked away and went, yep, I make a whole lot of mistakes. I think I play well, I draft well. And that's literally just what I want to achieve this weekend, is just put the knowledge that I've tried to learn into play, pick a good Highlander deck, make the right decisions. And I feel like that gives me a really good shot to win it, and if not, have a really good finish.
Yeah, for sure. So if you are not winning it, then we'll assume you're not for now, who do you think will?
It's an interesting one. I would have had different thoughts after I'd interviewed everybody. But I'm actually of a firm belief that you will win it if I don't win it. I think that you have grown as a Magic player exponentially in the last, I don't know, couple of years, ever since I met you. I think that you're incredibly smart, you're young, you're hungry, and you are impressionable to the point that it's actively good for you, because it's not you take what everybody is saying around you and you can mold it to your kind of whims. And what I mean by that is, like, you've got an interesting Highlander deck that you've proven it's a proven strategy, but it's also your take, and you've definitely shown that it works. You've got your own ideas of sideboarding, and I think that you're quite a good limited player, and you've spent a lot of time listening and watching, you know, either me play Crimson Vow, or you'd done prep before I had. I remember I was listening to a podcast that we did that I actually hadn't listened to a while back, and it was the one of, like, me the first time doing the fucking arena open. It was just like, it was yourself, myself, and I think it was Swanee. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this card? What the fuck is that card? And you were just like, yeah, that card's good. That card. So you've already done your experience. So I think that if it's not, if I fall short, I think that you have the best chance to win it. I think that you're not, I don't put you as a dark horse though. I think that the dark horse, as much as I hate to say it, might be Dogen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he's got a very unique draft style that other people might not be able to attack or exploit, because he has, well, he has a unique Highlander style and a unique drafting style. And I think that there are certain archetypes in this format that allow that kind of drafting strategy to thrive. And I think that if the cards are opened at the table in the right spot, Dogen will identify it and he will move in on it. And I've always thought that Dogen is quite a good limited player. He's obviously a very intelligent Magic player. Like, he's made the Pro Tour. He's proven that he can manipulate a tournament and get to the top of it. So I think that Dogen is my dark horse pick. And my love pick that I'd love to see is Papak. And I don't think I need to say too much on it. Everybody knows that Papak's grown up a lot in the last while with the limited format, with his Highlander ability. And I'd just love to see him get a top eight. This is his first champion, first champs, but I'd love to see the boy get up there in the top eight. That'd be wonders for me.
Yeah, I'd second both of those. I think you make a really good point about Dogen. He's a really good limited player, but he's also a very creative limited player who loves to push the boundaries and sort of see what's possible. And I think that ties back nicely to what we were talking about earlier about how these drafts will be different from your arena drafts, and the rawly good cards are going to disappear really quick because everyone's going to be onto them. Everyone's going to take the Abrades, the Flame Blast Bolts appropriately highly, and we're going to be left with not the chaff, but not those premium commons, not the premium cards, and then trying to figure out how to build a cohesive deck from that. And I think that is an opportunity where Dogen could really thrive, and he could find something that most people won't find, and find some sort of strategy or some just different perspective on the draft that could really propel him through this tournament.
Yep, for sure.
And I think I'd second Dan. I would love to see him top eight. I think it's been really good to see him drafting a lot recently. I know he's not normally a big retail limited person. Loves his cubes, loves his high power formats, doesn't usually draft very much of the sort of regular releases. I know he was bemoaning the other day about, you know, limited and board stalls. He was kind of going, I don't understand. And it's been really cool to see him learning. And I know you and I both sort of birded while he was drafting with Dogen, chatting to him and coaching him and seeing that, and Dogen just being like, you know, yeah, you just turn all your creatures sideways and attack here. And, you know, Dan's like, oh, this is how we work through board stalls. We just attack all.
Yeah, well, funny thing about that was it was a bit of a drafting session with Papak and I, but Dogen just came in and I just kind of just put the headset down. I'm like, that's fine. Just you go for it, dude. And I literally apologized to him today. I'm like, I just stopped talking because there's multiple things going on here, and it's not the kind of room that I like to be in when that's happening. But yeah, no, look, I think the other side of it quickly to mention with Papak was, like, with his interview, you know, he actually wanted to go and do some limited prep, and he's interested in doing, you know, at least understanding some of the format because he respects the tournament, he respects the people in the tournament. He doesn't want to go and just have to read cards and not enjoy himself. He wants to go in and give himself a red hot shot at, you know, doing well and having a good result. Because I think at Invitational he was a bit disappointed because he didn't do the limited side, and I think it cost him a little bit. So this time, yeah, I'd love to see him get a few wins in limited, get a bit of power behind him, and then yeah, hopefully see him in that top eight.
Yeah, absolutely. So the prediction I'm sure everyone has been waiting for with bated breath, this is the big one. Who's your pick for ninth?
Kyle.
Yeah? Why is that?
I don't know. It's Kyle. No, I think that, honestly, I think that Kyle actually might get ninth because I don't think he's done as much limited as he needs to in order to win this tournament. I think that he's obviously an incredibly talented Magic player. Like, you cannot deny that he is, when he's on, he is very hard to beat. But if he takes the Highlander deck that I think he takes, it's going to be not good for him. And he's going to have to really, really work and maybe get lucky in some matchups. And I think that the Limited is going to be tough if he gets a tough draft pot. So I think that Kyle could actually come in ninth.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I think he is such a good Magic player that even without the level of preparation of some of the other players, especially in Limited, he's good enough that I can't see him going 0-3. He's going to scrape out a win or two in the draft just based on really tight technical play, even if his deck isn't quite as good as it could have been, or he doesn't know the format quite as well as he could.
Yeah, yep.
And then as you say in Highlander, I think, again, he'll play really well. His deck is full of good cards, even if I agree with you that he's hamstringing himself slightly. But I could definitely see him finishing in that 4-3 range and missing on breakers.
Yeah, I don't understand that deck choice. I just don't. It just bemoans me to think that that's the deck. But that's fine. That's Kyle. Like, he's a master. You know, he's proven he's a master. He's a fucking GP champion. And, you know, we all love and adore him. That's why I give him... If anybody didn't know... If I am giving you shit, it's because I admire you. And because I give Kyle infinite shit, I obviously think the world of the kid. So, you know, if anybody thought that it was on the other side of that, it's definitely not. But yeah, I think Kyle has a shot to get ninth.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, that brings us pretty much to the end. Have you got anything else you wanted to say while you've got the mic?
I said it today, like, I just love the faction. I love the boys in it. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to seeing how I go. I'm really looking forward to seeing how everyone that I am interested in seeing how they do well. I'm really looking forward to it. I just want to play Magic. Like, I want to play these champs, and I want to see a winner, and I want to see hopefully me winning it, and if not, it doesn't matter. You know, it's all about the day, and it's going to be great.
Absolutely. I think that really sums up champs for all of us. I know we've all gotten very excited recently with it getting closer and with, you know, these interviews and some of the other content that's coming out leading up to it. But in the end, you're right.
I do have to prove Hoodie wrong, though. I cannot get fourth. I have to get better than fourth. That shit, that's not on. That shit is not on, Michael Hood. I'm coming for your ass after that.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you for listening to these interviews. This is the last of our interviews before the champs, but we'll be back next week back to our usual longer form episodes. Hopefully hopefully it'll be you or me on, because we're going to do a winner's interview and maybe that'll be someone else, but, you know, hopefully it'll just be our normal crew because one of us will have won it.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I think we're going to have some deck lists as well, so we can go over the Highlander and maybe even some interesting takes on the limited format. But yeah, really looking forward to the post tournament shit as well. Like, obviously it's content for us and it's content for the faction, but if anybody else listens to these and enjoys them, and I hope there are people that do it, because obviously we go out there, we do it for the family, we do it for us, but anybody else that enjoys it, you know, there's plenty coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thank you for listening. This has been the Faction Podcast, and we will be back after champs.
Bring on champs. Bye, Kyle.